always discipling. That's what I've learned through this process is you're discipling. The question is, what are you discipling? It's all about relationships. And when we do business networking, for example, at Christian Business Partners, you know, individually you're trying to, what men and women in business don't often realize enough is you're always building your brand, right? If we had a wedding planner, for example, who she would come into every meeting frazzled and late every time. And so what she didn't realize is that no one's going to call you to run their wedding. You can't show up to a meeting on time, right? If you can't organize your schedule, how are you supposed to organize the most important day of my life? And so that's the message she's sending, right? And so part of the training that we do over time is trying to coach and teach people that. And I think what that ends up leading to is that we should all be presenting ourselves in such a way that when the time comes, you know, 1 Peter 3:15, that we should always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that is in us. And so to be understanding that in those powerful relationships, those conversations are going to happen and happen naturally because people want to know you and love you first before they're going to trust you with business or with the gospel.
Welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men rediscover courageous masculinity. Pull up a chair as we gain strength from the stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. These men have discovered that in a world of superficiality and isolation, we need authentic brotherhood to gain strength for the battles we face every day. Brought to you by the ministry of CLC, which challenges men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ, welcome to Empowered Manhood. Hey guys, welcome back to the Empowered Manhood Podcast. My name is Mike Hatch. I am your host. And in just a moment, I'll be joined by my co-host, Amazon best-selling author, Chris Bollinger. Hey, today you get to hear from one of my good buddies, Alex Jannetty. And Alex is a real estate agent. He's a real estate investor. He's also a tremendous networker and is president of Christian Business Partners, which is a national Christian business networking organization. In today's interview, Alex talks to us about his passion for networking, and not just networking, but the connection between networking and discipleship. And as he says, you're always discipling through relationships. And he helps us understand how to do that better through networking, but also how to keep in mind that we are in the process of discipling others while we are networking, whether it be for business or for other purposes. Now, please remember that this podcast is a listener-supported podcast, and we would really appreciate your support if God so moves your heart to do so. You can go to our website at clchq.org. And on the top right side of the homepage, you'll see a big blue donate button. Click on that donate button. It'll take you to another box with a drop-down menu. And in the drop-down menu, you just want to choose National Fund. And then in the description, just highlight the fact that you listen to us through the Empowered Manhood podcast. You can just say Empowered Manhood. All right, guys. Hey, thank you so much for listening. Here is our interview with Alex Jannetty. Alex Jannetty, welcome to the Empowered Manhood podcast. Man, we are really grateful to have you.
I am so excited to be here. I have to tell you, Mike, we ran into each other, whatever it was, a couple weeks ago, or were reacquainted after many years of being separated. And you told me about the podcast. You then invited me to be on, which I was really honored. And I thought, oh, that's really cool. You sent me the link and I started listening. And now I'm in this really weird space of what am I doing here? I feel like it's like that kid on the JV team that gets to go practice with the varsity. It's like, you know, I started, some of these guys that you've had on are so amazing. Torres, and what he did.
Yeah.
Kyle, I know Kyle. So it was really cool because I was invited to, he does a lot of leadership stuff. He had this big summit. Yep.
Kyle Stark, by the way, if anybody wants to look up that episode.
Kyle Stark, he did this high-powered leadership summit, and somehow I got on this invitation. And I remember having that same feeling. I'm in this room with the GM of the Pirates and some high-level people, and I thought, what am I doing here? I don't know if I belong here. You know, radical mentoring. Oh, yeah. Marcus, these guys are amazing. So I do feel a little, I don't even know what the word is, but it's an amazing honor to be here because I feel like I have a lot to live up to. Either that or you're scraping the barrel on your guests.
No, no way, dude. No
Alex,
way.
Alex, I feel that way pretty much every week. Dude, so don't worry about it.
Dude, you are going to be, trust me, after having that conversation with you, Alex, because this is what we want. We don't necessarily always want that guy who's, you know, on a pedestal for other people. We want guys who are real, and God is doing some really significant things in and through you, Alex, in this Pittsburgh region and even around the country. And your ability or your, how do I say it, your approach or strategy to life and the way God is using you and mission, which we'll talk about through networking, I think is just inspiring. And our men need to hear this because men typically, and we talk about this a lot, are isolated. We don't connect. And then we end up depressed, fall into despair, maybe are addicts, look for escape, you know what I mean? And we don't realize that connection with other men is where we find empowerment through the Holy Spirit. And so when you talk about networking and your heart behind it and the connection between networking and discipleship for you, which we'll get to, man, that is a message that men need to hear very much. And you live it. You live it. So you're the perfect guest, man. So I'm excited you're here. So, okay. So Alex, first thing, we just started going down this road and before we started recording and I stopped you because I wanted to keep you as fresh as possible. We were getting into your fence post story.
Yes.
And so for guys who haven't listened before, this is maybe your first time listening, a fence post story, just imagine a fence along a property and you've got the horizontal pieces, but those vertical posts represent significant moments in your life or people in your life that kind of made you who you are today. And so Alex, yeah, man, what you shared in terms of your testimony, I'm excited for these guys to hear. So yeah, I'll let you take it from there. Share a few fence posts with us and help us get to know you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So what I thought I'd start with, significant moment in my life was just kind of my faith journey and just how I came to Christ. And certainly it was a process that evolved over a long period of time. I didn't have one of these Saul moments in the desert, you know, and that was one of your previous podcasts as well. I think it was the majority of us don't get that moment, right? It's a slow process. Yeah. So I'm a first generation American. My parents were born in Argentina. And so in that culture, everyone is Catholic, you know, by birth, not by anything else. My parents certainly weren't believers, didn't go to church. I did not grow up in the church. I did not have any kind of training in any form. And so I just kind of went through life as a normal kid and, an unchurched kid and just got caught up in doing worldly things. So found myself a father at 18 years old. I graduated high school on June 13th and my son was born on July 7th, 1986. And that was something that makes you grow up pretty quick. And I had dreams of playing college soccer, and I ended up going to a school that was more local so that I could work and then work a second job while I was going to school, which I did. But I didn't change anything necessarily in my lifestyle. And found myself becoming a father again. Short time later. So here I am at 20 years old with a son and one on the way. And I dropped out of Long Beach State where I was attending to get a third job so that I could now support my growing family. I then married my girlfriend of many years. So I'm 20 years old. I'm married. I've got two kids and life was just rough. And found myself then divorced at 22 with two kids. It was just a terrible place to be. And I remember just thinking, there has to be more to life than this, because if this is what life is about, it sucks. And so I was really kind of searching. And for what, I don't know, it was more just, you know, there has to be more. And so I was frustrated. I always had a good work ethic. So to me, it was just, if you make mistakes, just work harder, you know? hard work overcomes a lot of stuff, you know, but it doesn't overcome stupidity. I would get the Penny Saver, this magazine that would come to my house every week. And, you know, I was always looking at it as a young man for, you know, cool rims for my truck, or could I move out and get an apartment? Where were those being rented? That kind of stuff. And there was an ad in that Penny Saver from the local Catholic church. It was right around the corner from my house. And it was something to the effect of, have you fallen away from the church? Are you angry at God? Do you have questions? And they were having this kind of event, a meeting on a particular night. And I thought it was really interesting that I just happened across that. And I thought, well, that's the church in the corner. I'm going to go. And, you know, I had never been to church, hadn't set foot in the church, nothing. Mm-hmm. And so I get up and I go to this thing, and I drive and I get there and I'm sitting in the parking lot. I've got the car door open. My left foot is on the pavement in the parking lot, but my hands are locked on that steering wheel. And it's interesting because I don't know that I remember. It was just one of those things where, do I have the guts to get out of my car and actually walk into this thing? And then the weirdest thing happened, because a woman walked up to the open door and I noticed her and I look up at her, but she extends her hand, doesn't say a word. She extends her hand. And so without saying anything, I take her hand, I get out of the car, close the door, and then we walk in together. I can't tell you her name. I don't remember very much what she looks like. She was a blonde lady, much older than me. And that was it. It was very, very weird. So then I walk into this church, and we go into this conference room, and there's this giant oval table. And sitting around this table are, in my view at the time, a bunch of old people. The problem is those old people probably look a lot like I do and probably like we do on this call right now. Because when you're 22, everybody's old. And the other thing that got my attention was that the priest was sitting at the end of the table and he looked just like Kenny G. And and so those were things that those are tattooed in my memory. But so the priest started asking, hey, why are you here? What's going on with you? What is it that has either taken you away from the church or that you're upset about, et cetera? So they start going around the table, and I'm really grateful. Obviously God had his hands all over this, because where I was sitting, they started on the opposite side. So I got a chance to kind of really hear just about everybody go before me, which was really important. And so I remember this one gentleman early on, and as they're going around, says, well, I'm angry at God. He said, you know, I get married, my wife dies of cancer, and it takes a long time to recover from that. Several years go by, I get remarried, and my second wife dies of cancer. This guy is just pissed off at God, right? And and I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, whoa, that's crazy, right? He's saying, how can God let this happen to me? I'm angry. And then a woman, I remember significantly this one as well. These are the two that really stood out. Everyone had some kind of story that was powerful, and from a worldly perspective, certainly had a beef, right? Yeah. This woman was in a marriage for a long time, longer than I'd been alive. She was abused by her husband physically. She was abused mentally. She finally divorced him, and then she's excommunicated from the church, right? Because in the Catholic Church, you're not allowed to do that. So she said, how can it be that I am a victim of abuse for years and years and years, and I finally get strong enough to do the right thing and get away, and the church says, you're not allowed here anymore? And so I remember it finally gets to me, and they say, okay, so, you know, Alex, why are you here? And I remember this pretty vividly. I said, I shouldn't be here. And I said, there are so many of you people have these amazing testimonies. My reason and my frustration and the things that have happened to me in my life, I am 100% accountable for. No one did anything to me that I didn't do to myself. Wow. I was responsible for every one of my actions. I put me where I am, and I don't have any beef with anybody but me.
Wow.
And I remember just being overwhelmed with this conviction at the time that I can't, you know, complain. I can't moan and groan about where I'm at because I did it, right?
Yeah.
I did it all. So that was a really powerful moment for me and significant in terms of just, you know, understanding in life that I can't complain about my circumstances when I'm the one who did them. So fast forward a few years, all that did was kind of plant the seed. I knew there was more. I tried doing the Catholic thing. It didn't work for me. I went to that church a few times and I didn't understand it. I didn't understand the Latin. It was a lot of stand up, sit down. I'm repeating stuff that I don't know. And I said, I don't want to be saying or repeating anything that I don't know or believe yet. And so I just kind of left. But fast forward, I was always kind of seeking. I just didn't know for what. Years later, I meet my wife, Stacy, and she's amazing. She grew up, you know, in the church and grew up a believer her whole life, completely opposite story of me. And when I met her, it was the fruit of the spirit that I was attracted to. Clearly, she had the features that the superficial male is attracted to as well. However, you know, when it came down to it, when we sat down and we're having conversations, and it was, she's amazing, right? And I could not get enough of those conversations and those moments. And, you know, now years later, I look back and I'm like, oh, it was the fruit of the spirit that I was attracted to. And so I had this seamless moment where we started hanging out a little bit, started dating. And she said, okay, here's the deal. You got to go to church with me. And I said, awesome, let's go. And so I just started going, and that was it. It was kind of like, oh, this is perfect. This is where I'm supposed to be. So it was a really uneventful kind of journey from that standpoint, but that's kind of got me where I am, and just enjoyed this sanctification process over the years as we go along and continuing.
That's right. Man, thank you for sharing, Alex. That's great, man.
What do you think attracted Stacy to you? What did she see in you when she first started seeing you?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I haven't changed in terms of who I am. And I do think that, you know, from a worldly perspective, being a nice guy, being caring, being having some of those attributes where I was helpful, looking out for other people, those things were there. And, you know, thank goodness that she wasn't completely focused on being equally yoked, because she would have just passed me by, right? So
You're pushing against everything that I teach as pastor to young adults.
100%.
Hey, you know what? God does what he does in spite of us often.
Yeah.
Did she get any grief from her family when she started dating you?
No, not that I'm aware of. I mean, the fact that I was going to church, you know, and I didn't have a problem going to church and I enjoyed that, I think just was fine. And, because it was from day one. And we live far apart. So I remember I would, you know, we would go out at night, we would go back to her house, I would sleep in the loft, we'd get up on Sunday morning and we'd go to that 8 a.m. Lutheran service and traditional Lutheran service. And we would go to church, we'd come home, mom would cook breakfast, and then it was watching football with dad, you know, and hanging out. And so it just became what we did on Sundays. And so, yeah, her parents didn't necessarily have a problem, you know, with that. And I think they saw that I was there and I was engaged, and, you know,
so you got the Catholic liturgy, but you got it in English, and you got kind of Catholic light, right? Cause I grew up Lutheran.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah,
that's really interesting that, you know, a couple of years before that, you were getting pretty much the same service in a lot of ways, but it just wasn't registering with you. Right. It just, you know, you weren't ready, or Correct. It was in Latin, which is kind of tough.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I loved about that experience, and what I loved about that Lutheran, the traditional service that we'd go to, was all the liturgy and, you know, just being in that church, right? The stained glass windows. And to this day, that's amazing to me, right? I wish all churches still looked like that. You know, we're in a commercial building right now, and I realize that has nothing to do with anything at the end of the day, but there was something about that. I don't know what the word is. I want to say romantic, not in that kind of word, but just kind of in a sense of it. It just kind of takes you back, and it
almost nostalgic.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I feel it. I love that too. I love that kind of stuff. I could sit in a church and stare at the stained glass forever. Okay. So going back, Alex, you and I, when we first met, I was a pastor at Orchard Hill, and you and your wife had started attending there. And I know you're attending somewhere else now, but you had met with me and said that you were looking to connect with other small business owners because you had moved from California. I think it was California, right?
Yes.
You moved from California and were part of this Christian Business Partners network, and you wanted to start it here in Pittsburgh. Okay. So now, I don't know how many years later it is, but you've got how many different chapters of this going on around Pittsburgh now?
Yeah. So there are 7 in Pittsburgh. There's one in just outside of Philadelphia and one in Latonia, Ohio.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. God has run with this. It's been awesome.
And you started, you know, I think as I was looking at your bio, it was back in 2004, you say, after reading Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that you started investing, and you've had that kind of entrepreneurial bent to you, you know. Tell us a little bit about that background and your story, because you had that, there's another big story that happened there, I know, as you got into real estate investing, came through that, especially through the global financial crisis.
Yes.
And then what led you to different kind of ministry too? Share a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I learned in 2006 that you can't out-earn your stupidity. And so, in 2004, my wife and I started investing in real estate. And part of it was that I wanted to be home, right? You heard my story. I'm divorced with 2 kids. I have 2 older kids from a previous marriage. My wife, Stacy, and I get married, and God gives me an absolute redo. He gives me 2 sons, same ages apart, similar personalities. Right? Anthony's personality and Christian's personality so close together. Andre's personality, Samuel's personality. It's almost like God said, here's a second chance. Don't screw this one up. It's overwhelming. It's mind-blowing. So here I am. We have this traditional household. I leave the house every day to go slay the dragon and doing the corporate America thing. My wife is home and she's with the babies. The 2 older boys came back to live with us for a short while. All this is going on. And I just want to be home. I'm working in towards LA. My commute in the morning is an hour with zero traffic if I leave at 5 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
But on the way home, depending on whether I leave at 3 or 3:15, it could be 2 to 2.5 hours.
Oh, gosh.
Never seen traffic. I've been all over the country and it's the worst. It's the absolute worst.
Yeah. And so I would come home and just be so, you know, kind of in fits, and then to try to be present for your family and your kids. And, you know, we were part of a church plant at the time and, you know, heavily involved in ministry. And so it was a lot, and I just wanted to be home. And so I get introduced to this real estate investment club, right? They sell real estate sight unseen. Housing market at that time was just, we were appreciating 20, 30% year after year without doing anything. The house we bought for $220,000 in 1999 is now worth 400 plus. Wow. And I didn't have to do anything. Yeah, I didn't do anything to it. So we said, okay, let's pull some equity out. We took out $100,000 in equity and we started buying properties literally sight unseen. So we bought in North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Florida in 2004. And by the time they were all new construction, by the time they finished building them, each of them was already worth more than we purchased because they were selling those for higher than what we had purchased. So in my head, I'm a real estate genius. And so I decide, hey, why are we messing with these little, you know, $100,000 properties out of state when the big money's in California? So we moved out of our house. We bought another house in a neighboring town. And we rented out the first one. Oh, by the way, we bought that house with zero down. It was a 80% first and a 20% second. Then we turned around and we did it again. And we bought another house and rented that one out. And then we made one more move and went to this is where we bought the big fancy house, the gated community, swimming pool, whole 9 yards. We were it. We were George and Wheezy, baby. We were moving on up. So... I don't know if your younger guys are going to get this reference, but anyway, so here we are, right? But leverage to the hilt and did everything wrong. Negative amortization loans, 0% down, you name it. At the same time, I quit my job and I get into real estate full time on the lending side. because I understood, you know, the borrowing process. I could do the math. I loved the numbers. I was very involved in the community, my family, my church. I didn't want to be called away to show houses. I wanted to be able to do stuff that I could do without that. And so the housing market implodes. Everything implodes with it. Praise God for my wife because she didn't leave me. We had 11 properties, 11 mortgages to pay, and zero income coming in at the end of the day. We had a net worth when the dust settled because we lost our personal residence to foreclosure. We lost a rental property to foreclosure. We did two short sales where we sold two of our properties for less than what we owed on them. And then some of the other properties we were actually able to sell and scrape by. But when all that happened and the dust settled, my wife and I are looking at each other. There's no income coming in. My little boys are a little older at this point, 2006 and seven. And she was homeschooling them. So we're all in the house all day, but there's no money coming in. And so it was a matter of who's going to go get a real job first. And so she got hired. She works in the oil and gas industry. And we were just praying for a job with benefits. And God dumped this amazing opportunity. We switched roles and I became Mr. Mom and homeschooled my boys from second grade and kindergarten all the way up. And she went and slayed the dragon. And so because I was working in the real estate world and she's out now working, you know, slowly as things started to come back and my phone would start to ring again, I needed to start to get out and do things. Mm-hmm. And so I found this organization called Christian Business Partners. And it was established in 2008 by a gentleman, Pastor Doug Wilson. Started out in the desert, which is just great. That's how God works, right? He always meets people in the desert. And so he started out in Yucaipa, Redlands. He had a church out there. And he was a bivocational pastor who found himself on his knees praying because he too was in a world of hurt when all this happened. And just God led him to just get men and women from his church to just pray together. And they would meet each week to pray for one another and to pray for their businesses and to pray for provision. And then that morphed into Christian Business Partners. So by the time I found it was years later, but I had to go out and start networking is where this worked, right? I needed to leave and I needed to go meet people. I'm an introvert and people don't believe that when they meet me because they're like, Alex, you're out there. And I'm like, no, when you're talking to me about something I'm passionate about, I could go forever. But if I was at a dinner party, for example, with people I didn't know, or if I only knew one of you, I'm up against the wall, like it's the eighth grade dance. I don't enjoy meeting new people and doing that. So it really takes me out of my comfort zone. I go to a chamber of commerce meeting and I'm making connections and I'm meeting people, but it just seemed kind of off. And then, so after a few years, I run across this Facebook post that someone says, hey, I'm going to be attending this Christian Business Partners meeting at Denny's in Chino Hills, California. And by the time this happened, I was networking everywhere and I was involved in the chamber. I was on the board of directors. I was, you know, as I mentioned earlier, part of a church plant. I was coaching soccer at the recreational level. I was at coaching soccer at the high school level. I was involved in my community. I could have made a legitimate run for city council. And part of my arrogance, I was a little upset that someone had started this Christian organization without me knowing. How could I possibly not know about this? I was a little full of myself. So I go to this meeting and I walk into this Denny's restaurant in the back room. There are three people sitting there. And it's one of those moments when you're like, oh my gosh, I just want to turn around and leave. But they all looked at me and I can't leave now. And I'm like, oh gosh, I'm stuck, right? And so they were excited I was there and I walk in and what I thought was really cool, one of those gentlemen was Pastor Doug Wilson, and he went through the meeting. You know, he didn't change anything because the attendance was down. He just said, this is what we do, and this is the process we do, and he went through it. And I remember sitting there thinking, this is awesome. Why are there not more people here? This room should be full. And so I was all fired up. But, and this is the fear of man versus the fear of God that we all deal with. I'm not going to tell anyone though, because what if this sucks?
So I'm yes.
Right? Yes, I don't want to be embarrassed. Yeah. So I'm going to wait. I'll come back next week, but I'm not saying anything yet. So I came back the next week I think there were six or seven people at that meeting, and it was still awesome. And I said, okay, that's it. How can I help? And they said, you're the vice president. And I started, then you start getting involved. Well, the president stepped down. I took over that chapter. It grew. The ministry in California was growing. We had 30 plus people jammed into this little back room at Denny's. And then my wife gets a job in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And so we get up and move. And a powerful, I guess, fence post story for me too, was then coming here, not knowing anybody and having to completely rebuild myself. At this point, I had changed from lending to real estate sales, and I was forced to network. And everything that I had learned back in California, which was easier because I was familiar and I knew people, now I had to implement without knowing a single person. So when I met you, Mike, at Orchard Hill, and you're, the men's pastor, I figured you have to know guys that have businesses that run things. And so I was trying to start Christian Business Partners here, which Pastor Doug graciously allowed me to do. I started a Wexford chapter. It grew. People who got sick and tired of driving from Butler in the snow said, can we have a local chapter? And we started one there. People who got sick and tired of crossing bridges and tunnels said, hey, we need one in the South Hills. We started one there. And so when the shutdowns all started happening and we went to Zoom, just such an amazing testimony to, what the enemy means for evil, God uses for good. Because we all hated it. We all hated being shut down. We were not face to face. But all of a sudden now, the men and women who were in California doing this and the men and women who were in Pittsburgh doing this were on the same screens together and getting to know one another. And then we realized that it was easy for us to attend the California Zoom meetings because they happen at 11 o'clock in the morning for us. And so a lot of the Pennsylvanians were going and meeting with the Californians and doing business with each other from across the country. That was powerful. And so Pastor Doug decided that he had had enough, and he said, I'm going to step down. He said, Alex, I want you to take over the ministry. And so in 2021, I did that. We reincorporated and we had to renew our 501c3 and started a new website. And here we are today. We have 20 chapters, 10 in California. We have 3 that meet in person and 7 that are still online, but that state is a little different. And so that's just one of the things we have to deal with.
Just a little.
Just a little. Oh my goodness. And then we have 7 chapters here in Pittsburgh. We have 1 in Philadelphia, 1 in Ohio, and 1 that we started that is a national chapter where men and women who work anywhere in the United States get together. And that's clearly a Zoom chapter. But that's been a blessing to me. But being forced to go out and meet people, and then, along the same lines, when the pandemic hit, I was invited to attend this men's discipleship group at Northway, Discipleship Journey. And at the time, I remember being all on board, because weird things were happening in the world. I was highly alert to something's going on. Something's going on. This isn't right. And this is before the shutdowns. This is actually in 2019, at the end of 2019, I just started having this sense that weird stuff was going on. And I found myself drawn to and reading, Daniel and Revelation and Thessalonians and started, reading commentaries, on Matthew 24. And then all of a sudden I get a call from a buddy, Eli, who says, hey, I'm doing this men's discipleship thing. And I was wondering, and I said, absolutely. He didn't even finish a sentence. I didn't know what, when, where. And I said, I'm in. So I attended that. And so I've been doing that heavily. And in that process, and I think this is where you wanted to go with this, Mike, was we are always discipling. That's what I've learned through this process is, you're discipling. The question is, what are you discipling? It's all about relationships. And when we do business networking, for example, at Christian Business Partners, individually, you're trying to, what men and women in business don't often realize enough is you're always building your brand, right? If we had a wedding planner, for example, who she would come into every meeting frazzled and late every time. And so what she didn't realize is that no one's going to call you to run their wedding. You can't show up to a meeting on time, right? If you can't organize your schedule, how are you supposed to organize the most important day of my life? And so that's the message she's sending, right? And so part of the training that we do over time is trying to coach and teach people that. And I think what that ends up leading to is that we should all be presenting ourselves in such a way that when the time comes, you know, 1 Peter 3:15, that we should always be, you know, prepared to give a reason for the hope that is in us. And so to be understanding that in those powerful relationships, those conversations are going to happen and happen naturally, because people want to know you and love you first before they're going to trust you with business or with their, you know, the gospel, or even give you, allow you to have the permission to speak into their lives or to speak a word into them or over them, or even, you know, to be able to have that, can I pray for you? You know, let's stop and pray right now. And you talked about how you saw me just the other day, Mike, and yeah, here's a gentleman who walked across the room to say hello to me, and we're standing there, you know, and that's a guy who would just stop you and say, man, let me pray for you right here. And we could be in a crowded restaurant and he doesn't care. And I love that. That's what we need to be doing. Mm.
Alex, it's really cool to me that that relationship model was shown to you when you went to that Catholic church. You know, rather than somebody giving a presentation, he just let people talk. And everybody got to hear everybody's story right off the bat. And I don't know what happened after that, because you didn't say if the priest eventually said something, but just giving people the time and respecting and valuing that you want to hear their story was transformative for you. You know, it made a little change in you at the time, but it put you on a path where, you know, eventually God used that. But I want to ask you a question. So when you went to that first meeting in California, you said that it was awesome. Why was it awesome? What was awesome about it? What made you come back to a room where there were three or four guys?
Right. So I had been attending Chamber of Commerce meetings, BNI meetings, Business Networking International. And those meetings are great. There's nothing wrong with them. They do a really good job of, if you have a business, you're there to promote your business. And Christian Business Partners, the way it was then and the way that I've tweaked it a little bit now, is very much the same. The difference is we opened in prayer. There was a devotional. And at the end of the meeting, we prayed for one another. And I just kind of felt like, that's awesome. This is what those meetings are missing. This is what I want. This is what I need. And so that's what made it awesome. And as I started taking over Christian Business Partners, I've added some elements. I now call it, you know, church for business. And so if you come to one of our meetings, we're going to open in prayer, but we're going to open in worship. We're throwing on worship. We're going to sing together. We're going to worship the Lord together. We're going to pray to launch our meeting, to start our meeting. And at the end of the meeting, everyone has an opportunity to be prayed for, meaning that, you know, you can deny or decline or just say, hey, I'm good, you know, I pass. But whether we depend, every meeting kind of does it different and how they handle it. But whether it's a pad of paper that goes around that you write your prayer request and someone prays at the end, or we just go individually and say, hey, Chris, how can we pray for you? Mike, how can we pray for you? But you have that opportunity. No one comes to one of our meetings and says, boy, I wish someone would have asked me to pray. Mm-hmm. And then the other part is that we will share the gospel at every meeting. You will hear the gospel message. If it doesn't come up naturally in what we did that day, that someone's going to, you know, when we give announcements, for example, someone might just jump up and go, well, hey, I have an announcement. You know, do you realize what Jesus did on the cross for us? And then have that discussion. So now it is one of those things where we've had people tell us, man, this, I feel like I've gone to like a midweek church service, but it's business related, right? I can still try to get business. I can give business. I can meet people. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're trying to do.
That's so cool. So you mentioned before, and we started going down this path, and if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to hear you elaborate a little bit more on the connection between networking and discipleship. And what I will say this, one thing that I'm realizing out of what you're sharing is that networking is just like anything else when it comes to connection and getting to know other people, stepping out of your comfort zone, is there's a level of vulnerability that happens there. And in networking, actually, as I've found out more and more, it's interesting that, you know, most people are more drawn to you because of maybe your faults, your failures, your weaknesses, I think we're all used to hearing people brag about their accomplishments and how great they are. You know what I mean? And yet being vulnerable is one of the hardest things to do. That's what will often, you'll find connection. So I think there's a piece there, but I want to hear you share in your own words a little bit more about the connection between networking that you found and discipleship.
Yeah. Part of that was when I was in California, I was part of this networking group and I didn't like it. The guy who ran it was, you know, kind of a tyrant, you know. He forced us to have one-to-one meetings with each other and he wanted us to use this very specific method. And so there were only like eight of us. And so every 8th week, you're repeating people you've already met with. And we had to go back to the meeting the following every week. And you would have to report out on, hey, I had a meeting with Mike and this is what I learned about Mike. Well, Mike, you've been meeting with everybody else. And so every time you meet with somebody, you're digging in and you're going, dude, you got to tell me something you haven't told anybody. Like, I need something that's fresh. You know, I can't just go there and say, oh, Mike has this cool podcast. It's like, no, everybody knows that. You got to dig deep. And so that really sharpened this kind of skill. When I came to California, I had nothing to offer anybody. When I came to Pittsburgh, when I landed here, I didn't know anybody. Mm. So I'm going to chamber meetings. I was no longer homeschooling my boys. They went to public school when we moved here. I'm going to chamber meetings and I don't know anybody. No one's going to trust me. No one's going to walk up to me and say, hey, will you list my house? Will you some? No, they're not. They don't know me. So then I realized, and this is where the discipleship thing kind of came in, and it's been this amazing epiphany that I've had, is that I had nothing to offer anybody. So what I could do though, if I met you and I'm like, this Mike guy seems like a cool guy. Hey, Mike, man, I'd love to get coffee with you and find out more about what you do and how I could help. Because that's my only angle, right? Yeah. So I sit with you and I teach this method. I call it the Hangs method, right? So Hangs. And you write that on the side of a paper. And I would always sit down and when I meet with people, I'm like, hey, I'm going to take some notes. I hope you don't mind. I'm going to be writing, but I'm listening to you. And they're like, okay. And, you know, start off with their, you know, family first, you know, and just tell me about you. Where are you from? Are you from here? How did you and your wife meet? You want to get to know people. Then what do you do when you're not, you know, when you're not podcasting, Mike? What is it that you do? What do you love to do in your free time? You know, tell me about something you've accomplished that you're really proud of. Mm-hmm. Where else do you network? I met you at the chamber. I met you at B&I, but where else do you network? Where are some opportunities that I could be taking advantage of? And then depending on where I met them, G stands for what are the goals that you're working on and how can I help you achieve those goals? Or how's God working in your life right now? How's God working in your business right now? And then I draw a line because the S, the services that you provide, you know, let's say you're a plumber or something. I couldn't care less about that unless I know that what I've learned at the top is good. You fall in love with each other when you do this, right? You get to know somebody, you get to know their heart, you get to hear about their family, and you realize, man, I love this guy. Now I'm really interested in what you do. Tell me, where do you work? Do you have a service area? What are the things that you do? Like, I am now listening so that I can help you. I'm going to connect you to everyone I can. Give me your card. Yeah. I'm keeping that in the important business card file. If someone needs a plumber dude, I'm giving them your name, right?
Yeah.
And so I started doing this and I realized I had nothing to offer. So it was like, all I can do is meet as many people as possible. And the awesome ones, I'm going to just go promote like crazy. Mm. And so slowly over time, you know, the reciprocation started to happen as people started to get to know me. And, you know, I had this great interaction with someone where I met with them. And then I go to a chamber meeting like a day later, and she's standing in a group of guys. And she goes like this and starts waving me over when I walk in. And I thought, me? Like, okay. And as I'm walking over to her, then I realized, oh, wait a minute. We just had a one-to-one. It went really, really well. And all of a sudden, the instant street cred that I got when she introduced me to everybody was the unintended consequence of me just wanting to get to know her and find out how I can help her with her business. And that's when I realized that, you know, God can use that to build relationship. And then you just get to know people a little more intimately. And people love to talk about themselves. So when you sit there and you interview somebody you know, it's happening right now. I've been talking about myself for the last, you know, 45 minutes or whatever it is, right? But people love to talk about themselves. And so if you ask them a question about something they're passionate about, they're going to go, and that's where you learn. And so then there's that connection, right? You build a deeper relationship with somebody. It allows you to have more intimate discussions. It allows them to be more vulnerable with you. And then that trust comes in where they start even asking you about advice, whether it's business advice, personal advice. You know, hey, you mentioned that you have older boys. I'm struggling right now in my marriage. Tell me about what your divorce was like. And which I could say, dude, hang on. You need to fight for that, because divorce is terrible. It rips apart families. It destroys children. Don't allow that to happen, right? So, but it's one of those things where no one's going to feel that connection enough to just have that with anybody. We're all superficial. Networking is an oxymoron. You go to a networking meeting, but at that meeting, there's no networking that takes place. The networking takes place away from that meeting. When you and I sit down together and have a cup of coffee, or like we did a few weeks ago, you have breakfast and you just share openly, that's when the Holy Spirit can do their work.
Yeah, what I like about that, Alex, is that it works so well because it happens so rarely. I mean, what you're doing isn't rocket science, right? But who does it, right? I mean, people don't take the time, they don't invest the energy to get to know people.
Yeah. I mean, that's why when we in CLC, when we talk about the fence post story, it's such a big deal, because most guys just do not have that opportunity to share their story very often. And so when someone does offer the opportunity or wants to listen, whew, it's meaningful deeply.
Yeah. Well, way back at the beginning, I mean, Alex, you commented somewhat jokingly about how, you know, you're not worthy to be on the podcast because we have all these great guests. But the reality is that a lot of guys are like me. I used to get intimidated by guys. You know, I saw in other guys, I can't get to that level. I mean, these guys have their act together and I don't, and my life's a mess and their life looks pretty solid. But then when you take down some of those walls and you get to know guys, you find out we're pretty much all the same, right? I mean, we all have issues. We all have things we don't really want to talk about. But when we talk about them, we find that, you know, God is working in our lives and we can help other guys and other guys can help us. But until you take that step that you've had to take, it doesn't happen. Guys continue to be intimidating and, you know, we don't feel worthy to get in those conversations.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, we're the biggest posers out there, right?
Right. Guys,
we want to look good. We, you know, have to have it all together. And, you know, especially when you're, you know, in a business setting, you want to make sure that you want everyone to think that you're successful and you dress the part, look the part, talk the part. Yep. Things could be in shambles in the background and, you know, who knows? And who do you go to? You know, who do you ask and how do you get help? So yeah, it's really important. And for that reason, one of the things that I try to, you know, teach at Christian Business Partners is to be intentional about meeting with people and don't try to pre-qualify somebody, right? If you're a man, don't decide that you don't want to go have coffee with the Mary Kay lady because you're thinking, well, I'm not going to buy anything. Well, the reality is I wear Mary Kay. They have great cologne, right? So, but I,
you know, I didn't know that.
There you go. So I do joke about that, but you never know who you're going to meet. Right. And it's not about, if you only look at it from what's in it for me, it's wrong. It's wrong. If we just look at it like, I want to meet great people, I want to get to know great people, and great people know and hang around other great people. And so then you just start building this connection, this network of, you know, awesome people. And what a great place, you know, to be.
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, so many of us are very inward, self-centered, and we're not outward and focused on others. There's a lot of freedom in that when you're reaching out to other people and taking an interest in them. And what's ironic about it is, as you're focused on others, you do get some focus back to you. You know what I mean? Not that that's your, hopefully not your motive to begin with.
Right.
But God, we all have that need to be known and to know others. And when we reach out to know others, we're also known in the process. And especially when we're Christians, man, God moves in some profound ways.
I have to share this part because I started with, you know, or not my fence post story necessarily, but you asked about the kind of how I got in real estate and how that all imploded on me. But that played a huge role in where I am today, especially when we moved to Pittsburgh, because we started off with a negative net worth of $750,000 when the dust settled. Wow. And in my, I just thought there's no way I'm ever, ever getting out of this. And my only hope and prayer was that I didn't ruin my kids' lives and my marriage. And I figured I will have to work for the rest of my life to somehow get out of this, but I'm going to hope and pray that my kids, I'm going to train them so that they don't come anywhere near this. Mm. Well, God blessed us tremendously because we did jump on, you know, Dave Ramsey. I went and got trained as a financial coach. We started teaching Financial Peace University nonstop. We've taught it over 20 times. We've put hundreds and hundreds of people through the course. And each time when you teach it, you're going through it again. So it was nonstop for us. Well, we budgeted and lived off of my wife's income because that was the only income at the time, but we never stopped doing that. So over the years, as my income grew, it just went to paying off debt, as well as, you know, selling houses. And we lost some of those houses, et cetera. So we moved to Pittsburgh and we get to the point where we only had real estate debt. We had two rental properties and our personal residence. And since then, we've paid those off. And so we are 100% debt free. My son graduated from college without any student loan debt. My other son's a junior, no student loan debt. We put my wife through her master's degree and I went back in 2016 and got my undergrad from Liberty University, no student loan debt. And so what that does is it helped me to have the perspective of it's not about making money for me, which, you know, I was an athlete. I want to win. So when I go out and I, you know, you tell me that you want me to sell your house, you know, I'm excited. I'm fired up. I got this listing and now I want to win. I want to sell that house for you for as much as possible, but it's not about me, right? And so when you have that, and I try to teach this to people when they're in business, if you're burdened with debt, it's going to cloud the way you do business, especially when you're working with people who work off of commission, because that's where people then just get stupid. And one of my biggest frustrations is, you know, exactly that. I have to work with other realtors who, you know, clearly are working off of commission. And sometimes their, you know, decisions are clouded by who knows what. Mm-hmm. But when you can come from a place of freedom and truly being, I want to help you. I want to help you achieve your goal. I want to do what I can for you. It changes the perspective of everything. And that's powerful. And I think that really helps to open up those doors where you can be real with people and you can have real conversations and not be clouded or judged by, is this going to affect, you know, my piece of this pie? Who cares?
Amen. All right. We're coming to the end of our time here. We need to close up. But before I do, I just wanted to one last time, go through the hangs again. What do they stand for again?
H is hobbies.
Yeah.
A is accomplishments. N is networking. G is goals or / God, depending on where you meet this individual. You can ask both. And then S is services. What services do they provide? And then I always tell and teach people. I call it the hangs method. That's how it was taught to me. But at the very top, I always put a lowercase f because you should always start with family. But you don't want to call it the fangs method because then it sounds like you're sinking your teeth into people, right? So that's kind of
an I'm sorry. What was the G again? The
goals. Goals or God.
Or God. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you could make the H not just hobbies, but a little bit of history. You could say family history if you wanted to.
There
not,
you go.
Not have to put the F in there.
There you go.
Get the F out of there.
There you That's go. Right.
Yeah, I think of the Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, the FANG stocks when you say that anyway.
Yeah.
Man, so, okay, Alex, dude, this is fantastic. Really, really appreciate your thoughts and heart behind what you're doing. I think guys who are listening to this are definitely feeling empowered, are feeling, I think, encouraged about this because, like you said, it's not about us. It's about others and focusing on others. And that's freeing, man. It really is. So thank you for your wisdom and for your experience and sharing that with us today, man. So, so grateful for you, Alex. But as we close up, I want to pray for you as we head out here. Okay. Father, thank you so much for Alex, God. Thank you for his ministry and mission that you've called him to, the way you're using him in powerful ways in people's lives through networking that lead to discipleship, Lord. And Father, thank you for the connections he's made, for the knowledge base, in a sense, and wisdom that he's developed over the years of doing this that he's now able to share with us and our men. Father, I pray for those listening right now that they would not just walk away and forget what was said, but that they would dwell on it, spend some time maybe seeking you about where they can start looking to connect with others and begin networking somewhere, Father. In the meantime, we pray for your provision, continued provision, and sustainment and encouragement for Alex and for what he's called you to, Lord. And we thank you again for this time together in Jesus' name. Amen. Alex, thank you, brother, for being with us, man.
Thank you. This was awesome.